But bonus content, if you came here looking for just retro gaming news, you're now an Egyptologist.
Welcome to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan.
And this is episode 291, and it is a producer pool!
Producer pool.
Fight.
We are concluding the summer pool party officially this week with an elite and exclusive and exquisite and elaborate and
I'm wearing swim trunks.
We should have come and
no, I literally am. I'm actually
you're going,
wearing.
You're going to. That's where you got to go after this episode.
Yes, well, we got to go. Let's wrap this.
It's
up.
Nice and toasty here. We're about to spend a day in the hot tub because this is the hot tub after party.
Yes.
For our producers and directors. More on that in a bit. In this week's news, Activision Blizzard sucks.
Well, just leave it there. Seriously, they do.
I mean, it's not even, we can't even really joke about it because it began a couple weeks ago, I think, with allegations coming to light revealing a 2-year investigation into reports of pay discrimination, sexual harassment, and a general frat culture.
Correct.
It always is a bummer for us to talk about bad news at the top of our podcast, but it's also a bummer that Blizzard has created a culture that's this toxic and revolting, and we have to talk about it on our podcast.
Yeah, they've been sucked, but they super suck now, obviously, because of all the allegations. California suing them. And in response, they handled it really well.
Right, of course.
4 different PR responses from 4 different people, executives at Blizzard, all kind of conflicting. One person in denial. The other one kind of like not saying anything. It's been awful. It has been embarrassing.
They full on like had an employee walk out over this thing. It's bad.
Probably multiple.
But like good bad because it's bad that needs to be acknowledged as bad.
Well, not just someone walk off a team, Nolan. They had a staged walkout where hundreds of them walked out to say, we're not standing for this anymore.
Yeah.
Reasonably so. But, Nolan, it also gives you the chance to kind of just dog on WoW a little bit because on top of all of that, they've just been really screwing up that side of things. And you can then, in the same breath, applaud Square Enix for all that they're doing right with Final Fantasy XIV.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing FF14, for those of you that don't know. I'm, like, very addicted to it. And Asmongold is the biggest WoW streamer. He's also playing Final Fantasy XIV and openly trashing WoW. And his take is the correct take. The reason WoW sucks is because of all the stuff that came out. Like, of course they're making a bad game. Like, if that's the culture. They're bad people. And they're causing good people that work there to make poor decisions or not work efficiently or make... Like, it's... They're making a bad product because they suck. And it's got to... They have to change. They need to do what A Realm Reborn did. They killed Final Fantasy XIV, the first one, because it sucked. And then they brought it back and it's sick. They need to kill WoW because it's in an unrecoverable state, I think.
But it's even just the way that the companies are handling things of great importance and lesser importance. The lesser importance being the game. You know, like the culture and the way that you treat people is a lot more important. But the way that they're handling things are diametrically opposed to one another. And one is really good and really right and the fans are responding. And one is really awful.
Let's guess which one's which. The executives one of the Blizzard or WoW team employees called Asmon an a-hole on Twitter. Meanwhile, the people from Final Fantasy XIV's team were trying to make his first experience of the game as positive as possible by banning people that were trolling him, improving server capacity, because obviously a lot of people came with him. Like, And when they were like, hey, Final Fantasy 14 is really killing WoW right now, and they asked the Yoshi P, the producer, the games director, he said, I don't like to look at it that way. WoW paved the way for us. And he just gave props to WoW, and he was very humble. So I don't like Activision Blizzard. I don't like WoW. No one does. Yikes.
It's a bad situation. Hopefully they will get things together. They will make, you know, whatever reparations they need to make to correct things. It's just a mess. And I don't, I mean, I don't want Activision Blizzard to go under. I've enjoyed playing some of their things over the years, but I want them to do better. They need to restructure and redo what they're doing and get rid of the bad, come back in with good. I didn't want to belittle Kenny's looking at me, always just waiting for, you didn't even enter into the conversation. I know you've been on vacation, so you don't know about it.
No, I know all about it, but at the end, I always just am waiting for you to transition to puns, and I'm like, is this going to be in poor taste? Because this is actually an important thing. You need to hard cut off and not transition, and I don't know if you were going to or not.
I straight up wrote in my notes, I don't want to belittle the situation with an awkward transition, so let's just speed boost our way out of here and once again return to the planet Zebus. So it's kind of like not a little bad. Bit of both. It's acknowledging I'm not going to do it, and then it's doing it a little bit.
Yes. So we're in good taste.
In good taste. Don't cancel us. Like in our retro game of the week, Super Metroid.
Overview.
We have played Metroid, which is like 1989, right? Yep. Like ridiculous.
Before? Yeah.
Is it 87? It's one of those.
Yeah.
Or 88. We played Metroid Fusion.
Yes.
For GBA. The GBA.
Yeah, 2000 something.
Those are 2002, are the only two Metroid games that we've played Prime. On this podcast.
Prime.
You're right. Prime, which which is Metroid, but a totally different kind of Metroid, right?
Well, sure.
I mean, yeah, it's 3D.
That doesn't make it not Metroid.
You're right, Kenny. I acknowledged my mistake.
Okay.
You've been coming at me since last week, even before we hit record today,
calm
and you're going to need
bro.
To stop.
Calm down, bro.
No. He also asked before, what if I'm a dissenting voice on this episode? So, like, we've already got a little bit of things going on. So, we played three Metroid games, one very different than the other two.
Yes, yes.
And this is our fourth, although it is Metroid number three. It is the third Metroid in the series, a 1994 action-adventure game developed and published by Nintendo. It follows Metroid and Metroid 2, Return of Samus. Metroid was on the NES, Metroid 2 was on the Game Boy.
Yep.
And this is not only a sequel in that it's 1, 2, 3, but it's a sequel chronologically. It's the story continued.
Yep.
Are all Metroids the story continued, or the story before?
No. I do think some of them break that cycle. I don't know which ones. Like, Other M is like one that I've never played and I don't know much about. I'm pretty sure that one's just kind of like a random piece
of
the
story.
Yeah,
but that's a whole other thing.
That's Metroid, bro. Oh, great. I know he's on one.
Wow.
Okay. He's not going to talk much, but when he does, it's going to be wrong.
It's a good take.
Nolan, have you played Zero Mission?
I have, and it's excellent.
The reason why I asked, I was watching a little bit of footage. It looked very different from some of the others. Mm-hmm. So I'm just interested in the chronology and the lore and what pieces fall in where, because story is big and important for me.
Yes.
Metroid. We played Metroid on episode 101, and we did that together.
Yes, knees touching, we always like to say.
So good. That will probably always be one of the best moments just in the podcast because of all the stars aligning, and it was great.
And it was good production quality because three people used one mic.
And one camera. Like, in one room.
You can't beat
that. It was bad. So we did Metroid on 101. We did Metroid Fusion on 230.
Yes.
We did Metroid Prime on 234. Those are really close together.
Yeah, okay, was like Patreon messing with everything.
Maybe a summer pool party? I don't know.
It was something.
Because here we are at episode 291, and we're playing Super Metroid.
So if we follow this pattern, when will be the next time we play another Metroid game?
Next year.
It'll be a long time. Like, no, 2 years from now.
Oh.
Okay. Which is fine. We played all the good ones, right? Okay, so I want to know from both of you. I'll start. Metroid was my first Metroid experience. Okay? So that was playing That's it on beautiful. This podcast was my first, and then Metroid Fusion was my second, Metroid Prime was my third, and Super Metroid was my fourth.
Okay.
Nolan, what was your first Metroid?
My first Metroid was this game.
Super Metroid.
Yes. I grew up playing it at a friend's house. I didn't have a SNES at the time. But he did, and we played this game and Batman of all games. But this game stands out very much to me, like when I think about games in my childhood. And then later, I returned to it to speedrun it. And I think it's a gateway game to speedrunning. I'll describe why later, but yeah, I have a lot of experience with this game.
I mean, it absolutely is. It was a huge influence on speedrunning, like big picture.
Kenny, what was your first Metroid?
So my first Metroid was Metroid. My story follows yours exactly, Dang. Dustin. Okay. For these being super well-known classics, they never made it into my gaming repertoire. And so I've been getting to relive all of these or experience all these for the first time for podcast reasons, which is...
Yeah.
It's a mixed bag.
I love that that's the case for both of y'all because I get to like see what happens.
Yeah,
see your opinions.
I bet it's was a lot of fun, not just because I'm the one that did it, but to watch me do the first play this week, because I'm playing a game that you had a lot of experience with, specifically Nolan, as a kid, and like it's me watching one of you, you know, play not necessarily Final Fantasy VII, but something like that, or Legend of Dragoon, something that I have a deep connection to, Alundra. Like there's other games like that where it was interesting this week because I did the first play. We recorded on like early last week, so I got to I beat the game before it was announced. I think the first time,
I don't remember. You it was right did. Around there. I watched you beat it. I watched you stream it too. Like I loved watching.
Which was problematic because on Monday when we early access released the first play to our patrons, they were like, "This is great. Can you please record your entire experience? Can you please do a full play?" And then at that point, I'm like, you know what? That is a great idea. The only problem is I've already beaten
it. Did it.
But so like, they'll forgive you because that is a testament. But we'll see.
You can't get that first play experience a second time.
True.
Like,
they're
never going to get to watch him do it because he was so hyped about the game that he jumped early on the first play and then like devoured the thing before he
He's done that a couple times, Kenny.
I've done that a couple times. Yes. Specifically with Metroidvanias.
Absolutely.
That it tends to happen with Metroidvanias for me.
This is your genre. I think this is actually your genre even more than like JRPGs.
I think it might be.
Oh my gosh.
Like fall in your heart. Maybe not in your brain.
In my heart. We talked about it. We'll talk about it more in gameplay. But yeah, it's a completionist's dream or nightmare. I tend to bring up both of those because specifically in this one, we'll get to some of it. But it really is something that completionists like.
The thing about nightmares is that they are all dreams.
Wow. Did Aristotle
preach,
say that?
Brother, preach.
That's actually really good.
Oh, you probably have story. You have plot.
Yeah.
Okay,
I've got just a little bit of story. I said story is important to me. That's why I was asking about chronology. But the story is, I think the story is richer than what the games actually reveal here. Because really, this game is just Samus Aramis returns to the planet Zebes. It's Zebes. That's how they pronounce it in the games, not in this game, but in the games that they have voice acting.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's right. Honestly.
I
think it's
Zeb.
You say Zebes?
Yes.
Zebes nuts?
No, not Zebes. You can't do that.
All right. I thought that.
Yes, I do. Because long story short, the Chozos, the bird-like creatures that are that are the foundation to this game, that was their home planet, or it was one of their planets for the longest time.
That's how they say it?
They have a lot of like Egyptian like imagery, especially in other games that you follow.
Okay, I'm following you.
Thebes is the an ancient Egyptian city that god or that Egyptian culture came from, spelled the exact same way as Thebes and Zebes.
You just convinced me. See, I believe everything you say.
I never knew it was pronounced Thebes, and it's one of those words I've only ever read and not heard said, and so I don't know whether to just assume you're wrong, because in my mind it was always Thebes, or to just be like, oh, hey, learned something new today. But bonus content, if you came here looking for just retro gaming news, you're now an Egyptologist.
Might be completely wrong. The story, Samus Aramis again returns to the planet Zebes because the leader of the space pirates... The leader of the space pirates.
He just got Aramis? Like, is that what you're laughing at? He said that earlier.
The whole alliteration of all of it when he says it like that.
I'm not trying. Can y'all just listen?
Okay, I gotta go. No, we gotta finish.
I'm about to try a story the third time.
I'm not gonna derail you anymore, probably.
She's going back to the planet that she visited in the first game, maybe the second. I haven't played it before. Ridley Scott, the leader of the space pirate, who is a dinosaur, who is now in Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Has I didn't stolen. Know
that. Yes, playable character. Pause. Kenny.
Tell me that.
Kenny, you said you weren't going to interrupt me.
I take you back. I'll get caught up on Smash Bros. News later.
Believe it or not, story, Kenny, Ripley Bros. Is in. Okay, Dustin, finish. I gotta go.
We're in rare form. We have to get through this podcast.
Ridley has stolen the Metroid.
Okay.
And we got to get it back. And so she goes back to the planet Zebes to return the stolen Metroid that she originally stole.
Yes.
To save it, all right? This was a Patreon pool. It was submitted by a Marlian. It was a producer pool, excuse me, a director pool. A Marlian, Wardana, Shauna, Brojim, Jordan, and Francesca. You have those six people to thank for this special episode.
Thank you.
If you'd like more information about how you could be a producer or a director or a patron of any degree, then you can visit patreon.com/NGPpodcast to find out how you could be a part.
Gameplay.
Super Metroid absolutely lives up to its name. You quickly see that this game is Metroid, but more.
But super.
Not only do you start basically with this sort of shout out to the previous games in terms of your location, and then quickly learn that the premise is going to follow what every other game has been. Find power-ups, use them to explore. I don't think we need to fully explain the sort of Metroid-style gameplay to people. It's so well-known, it feels a little, you know, it's ubiquitous.
You mean the Castlevania?
Stop.
Castlevania-style gameplay. I can't even say it. That's dirty. The Super Metroid-style gameplay of exploring the world, getting upgrades, all of that. If you don't know what that's about, just go play this game.
Yes.
But this game starts all that and then immediately shows you it's just going to be even more. More power-ups, more environments. It's all the stuff we liked about Metroid, but super-er.
Yeah. I'm going to be quiet a lot in this section because I want to listen to y'all talk, and I have a lot to say, but yeah.
I literally came into this show being like, I want Dustin to give the love letter to this game that I gave to Super Mario last week. And so like, yeah.
Why? You assume that I liked it?
Yes, I do.
I jokingly brought up, but we do need to talk just a little bit, although we've kind of exhausted out on other episodes, that this game, along with Castlevania Symphony of the Night, is credited for establishing the Metroidvania genre, which we discuss is kind of silly because it really is just Metroid did it first.
Just
Castlevania did the same
Castlevania
thing?
Used the template, but with a Dracula theme.
It? But popularized it maybe more?
Maybe.
My notes, I said this solidified a genre because it already existed. This isn't creation of a genre. It's, again, this game is great, but it is It is Metroid. They'd already figured out how to do these games. Yes, they waited a long time, a decade, and even kind of later into the SNES life cycle to feel like they were finally at a place where they could do this series justice.
This was 8 years since a Metroid release, if I understand that correctly. So they had gone silent for a while. Fans were hungry for something. And then to get Metroid, but yes, Super, and to return to some of the same environments straight away with some of the same themes, but everything's looking better, sounding crisper. And then more the same upgrades, but better now, and more upgrades. Like, I loved that Brinstar, the original location in the first game, or at least one of the major locations in the first game, is at least partially revisited here in this. You can watch the first play. I really would encourage you, not just because I played it and it was enjoyable, but because there was I know it says it in the opening dialogue, and I did catch that, but there was a moment in that first blue room that I was about to exit the right door, and then you can see something in my mind click, and I'm like, this feels familiar. And then I followed my senses back to the left and found the morph ball. Where the morph ball be?
You did. It was so sick to watch that happen because I watched your eyes change because you realized that's good game design, fellas. That's cool. Really sick.
It really is. There's other good reasons to watch that first play too. I won't spoil them, but some fun kind of moments that hook you in and make it a little bit longer and a little bit more interesting than sort of just our normal vanilla first takes of games. So like, go watch it if you haven't.
You walk past the broken mother brain freaking cage thing.
Love that. Okay, so we're on the same planet. What are these? What's Brinstar? Because it's not a world. Like, you're on the same planet. It's
areas, Norfair, Brinstar, Meridia. It's like different areas of...
Now, those aren't all the same from the original game, right?
I don't think so. I don't remember, honestly. I've only played Metroid 1 that one time, and I remember Norfair's in there, but I don't know. Or Brinstar? I don't know about
Brinstar for sure is. And I think some of the others, but you're not exploring the exact same maps. Some of them are the same. Yeah. The cool thing is that even in Brinstar, like the same place that you're exploring, the same enemies are positioned there. They look so much better than just pixels, but they're there. And like, having played this, seriously, so 101 would have been what? 152, 250? Like almost 4 years ago at this point, three or 4 years ago. And I was able to remember, no, this is the same room. These are the same enemies. That's something special.
Absolutely. And it makes the game start so strong.
Yeah.
Even if you're not familiar with it, it's still a good start. Like you get ambushed by Ridley and you're like, wait, stop, what? It's such a strong start for newcomers and for veterans especially. What I think, yes, Kenny, what you said earlier about this game is Metroid 1, but Super. Yeah, of course. But one thing that I think they just perfected in this one is the exploring aspect of Metroid. That's the real core gameplay here. Yeah, you fight and you collect and all those are from my notes still, but at the top, you have this sense of exploration. And I can't name a game, even Zelda, that does this like blind exploration of a world better. It's so vast and dark and scary, but you are getting... But the way they've designed the stages and the rooms... They're rooms. That's why this genre is different. The way they've designed the rooms is so clever. For instance, the morph ball thing, Dustin, you get the power up. The only escape from that area is turning into a morph ball and going through the skinny thing. They do all that so well every single time, every power up. Like, there's always that one moment of like, oh, they just designed it in a way that teaches the player perfectly.
It's really funny that we're playing Super Metroid on the tail end of Super Mario Bros. Right. Bros. Because they both are experts at teaching the player how to... We went over that in extent during last week's episode, but this is this learn from Super Mario, I guarantee you, you know, it learned some of what Super Mario Bros. Did, and then it evolved it here to where you don't have to have a manual. for most of these abilities and things.
Sure.
Most of it is immediately self-taught. Immediately they put you in a position where you've got to do that to be able to advance or get out of the room that you got that ability in. Now, I do think there are a few times where that is not clear or where the mechanics do not work as smoothly as they would have liked. And if this is remade someday, then I think that they should go at greater lengths to explaining some of those
the
things.
Shine sprite stuff.
Are you talking wall jumping? Because they tried to show you that it's a thing, which was great.
With those little aliens? Yeah. Alien babies?
Well, also with the animation of Samus like putting her foot on the wall for a second, and you're like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but I think you would benefit from wall jumping a lot earlier than when you come across those. Which, by the way, you could come across it relatively early or way late. That's the thing with this game is that you don't have to go the same direction or the same route every time that you play it. You can do it somewhat differently.
Love that. Even to a point where and obviously speedrunners know this better because some of it's unintended, but you can really break the order of which you go through the game. And I love that about this game. I love giving the player that choice is so good.
The Shine Spark. They've also got another alien. It's that bird creature that teaches that at one point. The wall jump, they're somewhat inconsistent. And then it might be considered the Shine Spark, but when you run and start to get that glowy and then you jump roll you can get a lot further with it. Just some of those things they don't necessarily teach, which I think is in conjunction with another of my gripes, is that there are some, I'm a completionist. The first time I played this game with a guide, I know that would, cause some people to be distraught.
Who cares?
I got 99% with a guide. I knew that I was missing one missile power-up. Kenny, I looked. I went through the map two more times, I was like, I just got to finish it.
He went through the entire map twice.
Yeah, so it hurt me. And I was like, obviously, I cannot be okay with this. So I went through the game again, partially blind. I mean, I'd already played it. And then partially with a map, but no guide, no text guide telling me go in this order. So I kind of went in whatever order felt right at the time. That was kind of even more enjoyable, and I knew the world a little bit more and the mechanics a little bit more, right? But there are some power-ups. There are some missile, collections, some energy reserve tanks, whatever. There are some items that if you do not have a guide, you're going to miss.
Insanely well hidden, unless you're totally committed to trying every single possible thing. There's some stuff you just shouldn't find.
When in doubt, power bomb in the middle of the room.
Yeah, do that. But then there are open spaces too, like where your ship is, and there are two or three, missile tanks there. Kenny, you said well hidden. I do think that there are a lot that are well hidden. I think that there are some that are poorly hidden, that even if you do not have a guide and you did not have internet back in the day when you were playing this, that no matter how many hours you put into it, you most likely wouldn't find them.
Okay, I disagree. I agree with you that in a week's time when you're a completionist and you want to get 100%, yeah, that's frustrating. In 94, or even now, for a casual player that does want to finish the game fully but has more time to dedicate to it, I think exploring the entire game is not a bad thing more than once. And so I think that it's fine. Future games solve this problem. I'm trying to remember how they did. Maybe they didn't.
By being less gimmicky?
Well,
by just acknowledging
that
it can be forced?
Maybe a detailed map. I don't remember what they did in Fusion and others, if they did anything. But I think it's okay. I think even though some of it's a little janky, encouraging or being lost in this world for a long time, I think, is a positive.
You know what I wish they would have done, and I don't think this would have broken it, is on the map, in your menu, if they would tell you how many of what is in that world, in that area. Not in the room, in Bryn Star, there are 12 of this. There are 6 of this. There are 3 of this. So it doesn't tell you any detail other than there's more to
You're
be
true.
Found
that's
here.
A great, that's a good idea. Resident Evil solved this problem. They what, did do Kenny? It by room. They yeah. turned the color of your map from red to right. blue.
Once you found it all.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. I'm not as big a fan of it as a solution, but I think they should do something.
Just turn your solution down. Sorry, Dustin.
I think I communicated, if I didn't, that my second playthrough, I did 100% complete it. So
I'm
I was
so glad
able to
did.
Find everything. The thing that's interesting, actually, is that after I did that, after I was ready to go to Turian, I think it's that last room that you can't get to until you finish all the bosses. Yeah. I had 4 missiles that I still hadn't collected. But I was able to... Since I had explored the map organically a little bit more, I was able to remember, okay, I haven't been here, or I didn't see that before. So it really helped with that.
I'm so glad you did. I was worried.
Boss fights are a big thing in Metroid.
Yes.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 major ones here with a few, side bosses called?
Yeah.
Mini bosses. Thank you. which one was your favorite to battle this week?
Okay, easy. Very easy. It's always been Fantoon. Fantoon is the eyeball head ghost.
Yeah.
For a couple reasons. The fight itself is okay. It's fine.
Is he in the wrecked ship?
Yeah, the ghost. Okay. So the area leading up to this boss is one of my favorites because it's so, again, the atmosphere they set, so creepy. Like it's a ghost town, essentially, a ghost ship. Yeah. And after the fight, too, that whole setup there is so good and atmospheric. But also, there's this, fan theory that Fantoon is Mother Brain's ghost from Metroid 1. And actually, that's a true theory because in the Japanese handbook, it does explain that Fantoon is, Mother Brain's consciousness. And, I think the lore there is super sick. I love Fantoon.
It's a pretty strong theory when it's a correct one.
Well, they didn't know because, people can't read the booklet.
Kenny?
Did you hear the theory about the Hobbit?
All right.
Threw the ring in and...
Kenny, what was your favorite boss battle?
He doesn't know.
He only did one.
No, favorite boss battle is... I'm not going to say the last boss because I think that's what we're talking about, but without spoiling, I don't know if we can do that. So I'm going to say, mechanically, I really liked the boss. I'm not cool enough, Nolan, to know boss names, but the one that just, opens up and you got to shoot the innards with missiles. It's early on, but it's
no, that's
it's
not Krakenmire.
The one where you shoot inside of its mouth?
No, it looks sort of like an eye, and it opens up, and there's the little pillar in the middle that you got to hit with missiles.
That's what Nolan just said, I think. That's Fantoon.
No.
No, you're talking about the plant? The plant thing that's dangling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It dangles.
I don't know. My favorite was Dragon. My favorite was Dragon.
Oh, really?
I think that fight is so cool because there is a unique way to finish it.
You got to describe it. I don't know who Dragon is.
It's bug. It starts out as a cluster of bugs, and then
it's a bug-like dragon this room that picks you up and hits you with its tail and has these various drops on you. But the cool thing, Kenny, is that you can blow off some of the side panels of the room, and little electric sparks will be there. It's after you've gotten the grapple hook, and so when he's picked you up, if you can successfully tether yourself to one of those electric things, it will electrocute you, but the enemy as well. And so if you have enough health, you can wipe it out in that one move. And I think that is such a cool mechanic. It's kind of hard to time properly, so you don't have to fight it that way. There's one, another, there you can fight it normally. But if you want to, you can gimmick, I guess, that. And it's just a really cool idea. I love that.
Love the boss fights. That's another thing that Metroid just is best in class at, is just the boss fights being memorable. Ugh, I love all the bosses in this game. Kraid.
And just in putting in that level of detail on stuff. It wasn't the first time it happened. It happened numerous times throughout this game. But there were so many moments that I was like, they didn't have to do that. But they decided to do that, and it's so much better for it. Even escaping and the countdown clock and then your camera angle goes kind of wonky and everything like falls from to the side place, as you're climbing up in that literally that like opening sequence. And then again and again, they give you power-ups. They give you moments where you use those power-ups in unique ways or like hide something in a clever way, but don't repeat it. Just use it as like a one-off. And you do it and you're like, they didn't have to care this much. And it I love those moments.
The statues that give you your power-ups, you trust them. Yes. You're like, oh, cool. You shoot them, get your power-up. And one freaking comes alive and starts, like, attacking you.
or the one that like, moves and then, like, that walks you. With you. Yeah, that carries you.
Oh, it goes down. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool, like, not quality of life, but, like, attention to detail. And it's another company that you can tell they really loved this IP.
Yeah.
They invested in it. They didn't just give you a game to play in the universe. 8 years after the last entry, they said, we want to do something that will put Metroid on the map and keep it there for decades and decades to come. And they gave us Super Metroid.
Aged.
This both feels like SNES and does not feel like SNES to me at all. So what I mean is this game, when I think about it, it's a huge nostalgia bomb for me. Childhood, playing it with a friend, progressing. Sure, SNES. Perfect SNES era game. But then I think about the actual game and what it is, and I'm like, this game feels like it was post-SNES. It feels advanced and in many ways. And like, I know it came later in the lifespan.
Yeah, it did.
So there's that to consider. But even still, I want to say that if they made this as a launch title, it would still be this game. I really believe that.
Like, I don't think they would have been able to make it as good as a launch title.
Right.
There's two sides of this coin. They waited to kind of like know how to do Super Nintendo right, and really did milk it for all it's worth. Like, this game shows off Super Nintendo well.
It was the largest Super Nintendo game at the time. Like the
amount of
memory. Memory-wise, the amount that they used was greater than any game that had been out on the
Way you held up your hand made me think you were saying it was actually a bigger cart, like physically.
No.
And I was like, nah, bro, that's not how
But
that
I mean,
works.
we're talking like three megabytes, you know, something so astronomically small.
But it was a huge amount relative to other things at that time. Yeah, absolutely.
You forgot where you're going?
That's good.
You can't just do that.
That's my favorite.
I could have bailed or gone somewhere else. And
I'm not even past it.
What I said before is what I meant.
He said, period. That's what I mean.
Okay, to break it down further, the graphics. It's...
You forgot to? Yeah.
No, I didn't. I'm not. It's like the backdrop is extremely detailed. Not only that,
so good.
Every area, Brinstar, Norfair, Meridia, all these other ones we've been talking about, have their own feel to them. That's so impressive to me. I mean, the sprite work is excellent. But then when you just like take a step back and look at what's going on behind Samus, it's mind-blowing. It's actually so good.
Can we just talk about the visual impact on some of the areas of keeping stuff that's off the screen actually black? Like, a lot of times you have these areas where, like, you're in a cave, and instead of putting a bunch of, you know, like, rocks in the dead space, it's just empty. Like, they just leave it empty. And so the space feels smaller and tight. And so intentional. It could feel like the wrong decision when you just say that, but adds to that tone and the realism so well. And that's just one example detail of places where, again and again and again, they nailed the visuals here. And...
You want to know what's weird? This week when I started Super Metroid, I felt the way that I'm about to describe. I think it is in part because we played Metroid so long ago, but I think in part it's because I've seen Super Metroid speed ran so many times that imagery is just ingrained in my mind as Metroid.
Yep.
That when we started playing, I was like, this is what Metroid looks like. Like the first game. Yeah. I had to go back and look. Metroid looks bad, dude. Like, I mean, like, It's pixels, color pixels.
We praised it because of when it came out, but like when you look at it up against this, you're like,
"Oh." It's funny that when I was playing, I feel like that's what I remember Metroid being. You know how sometimes like that's how you remember the graphics, because when you're in the world and when they create the environments, it's like, no, that's what I was envisioning. That's what I was seeing, even if that's not what it was. I think that's in part what it was when I'm reflecting back on Metroid. But if you go and look at it compared to Super Metroid, it's different.
It's like MS Paint, bro. It's rough.
It's very different.
Again, that's why I feel like this game's just even more advanced than SNES era games. I don't know. It's just the characters are large and detailed. It's just so good. But
musically, what they do with Metroid is minimalism and ambiance and environment. All of those are more important to the composer and to the creators than creating some brilliant masterpiece of a soundtrack. And so you get that again here with Super Metroid, a game that has themes for each new environment, has themes for when there's a power up in the room or when you're in a boss battle. But for the most part, it's very minimal and just trying to create this eerie experience for the player.
Danger. We said it in Metroid 1 too. They did it then, which is still impressive. But for this game, the silence too, the use of like no music, you think, oh man, they cheaped out. They could have put music here. No, that was intentional. No, I assure
every one of those
you. And it's terrifying. Yeah. Like that whole section I was talking about that I really like, the ghost area, like that music, it's not even music. It's just a hum. It's scary. Like, it's danger. They're so good at this. They're the best at this. They still are.
Absolutely.
Atmosphere,
And not stopping at developing that sort of soundscape that, like, is describing what you're seeing and feeling with music. They did it with sound effects, too. When to do them and how to do them and the combination of those two working together. They just – everything they wanted to craft in terms of feel of this game – they crafted without being too heavy-handed, while still bringing back the themes that were known. Throughout this whole series, they're really good at that. And, I mean, a lot of the good, like, series games do that, but it's easy not to, or to, like, introduce new stuff and forget some of those old motifs. They just, it's the perfect blend of all the things they've going on. So well done.
You know, one other thing audio-wise that I think they did well is just with the sound effects. Like, especially I'm thinking, when you come across the Metroid, the specific Metroid, it's an alien. And so you can't converse with it. You can't have a conversation with it. In fact, you never even hear Samus's voice in this whole thing. But they even give sound effects to that Metroid when it is angry with you and vile. And then when it, and then a different kind of sound effect to give the gamer the idea that
it's friendly,
there's recognition here. And that's just one example, but from the various bosses to there are these sound effects that are used throughout the game to add to the atmosphere and to convey story elements, plot elements that in a major way.
Masterful.
I mean, I think talking about that is one of the things we can't overlook talking about this game. So much story is told through the environment that you're in and what you go through.
Almost all of it.
What the bosses are, everything. It's a visual novel adventure that you're going through. You know, like the storytelling is the place and the sound and the actions. And that's hard to do, but they do it absolutely stunningly well.
That's impossible to do. I can't name anyone else.
It's also just worth pointing out the legacy stuff here. I think anyone who's listening to this podcast is probably pretty familiar, but this game has like legacy hype credentials. It solidified a genre. We already talked about that. It makes all of the best game ever lists and pretty high up there, topping some of them. It's been re-released on every version of everything that it could have been released on. Pretty much every metric you can have for a game being ultra successful outside of initial sales.
In Japan.
Really?
In initial release area.
That's what I was thinking.
It didn't do super well in Japan on its release. What? And there's some reasons why people think that is. Some of it's late in the season. You know, it was competing with some newer consoles and some different things. But it... it kind of flopped originally, and then everyone realized this thing was a gym and just blew up in every other measurable way.
Nolan's like, I'm never visiting Japan. That just sealed the deal.
I'm never playing Super Metroid.
Yeah, no, is it? That's I was thinking that as you were talking and leading up to it, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's just astonishing to me. That it wasn't beloved by all at first. The thing about these kind of Metroidvania games is I just think, in relation to its age, there's so much replayability for these games, because one, you can beat the game far less than 100%.
Sure.
And at the end of a game, it always tells you what percent of items you were able to find. Mm-hmm. And so it encourages you to play it again and try to up that percent. So there's that.
And it tells you your time that it took you to complete also.
It doesn't, I don't think, in this game. I thought it would. Well, I had a conversation with some of our community members because they asked me what my time was and I wasn't able to find it. And then they looked it up. I don't think that it does, but I might
be the only one that beat it this week.
I'm almost certain it does.
Yeah, you didn't beat it this week, Kenny. But it should if it doesn't, because there are three time-based endings. Now, it's just, I think that this probably doesn't age well. The benefit of beating it faster is seeing your protagonist in less clothes.
What?
Yeah, but like, it's not like she's getting naked for you. You're putting that in a weird
context.
You get
to see the hero underneath the suit.
Yeah, it's
okay, come on.
It doesn't matter that it's minor changes. The fact that you get something for completing it more quickly, even if it's something minor, is meaningful. It's not the fact that you get a different image at the end that people are after. It's the hype and the cred of getting to that point. Absolutely.
There's percentage completion. There's the different endings. There's order choice of like which area you go in. And then you even have the option at the end to save or not to save. Are you going to save the aliens? Or are you going to save the pixels? The
frames.
The frames. Thank you.
Early on, I said that I didn't like the fact that everyone says this is the thing that kicked off this genre because Metroid. And so I think it over-exaggerates the amount of credit that this gets as like a genre definer. I do think, though, that it's worth pointing out that this is kind of a different genre definer, in that this was sort of the first, maybe not first, but one of the most popular and influential speedrunning games.
Yeah.
Because of all of those elements of completion percent and time percent and all of that stuff, it sort of helped move that community and create a thing out of it. And that's worth noting, because it's
outside of like
a niche thing.
FPS speedruns, I think those were like the first like Quake in those, but then like platformer speedruns, that was like, huh? Maybe Mario was the one, but I know what you mean, Kenny. It was a gateway for me into speedrunning. And so, yes, I know what you mean.
Well, this game gives you all of the tech to go fast, you know?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
It gives you the incentive to go fast. And, I mean, even to the effect of when you've got a long enough stretch to go fast and you've got the right abilities, you can just plow through in most minor enemies because of your ability. They'll be destroyed as you plow through. So, like, there's a lot of incentive to run it as fast as possible. It's seen at almost every single, if not every single, Games Done Quick, GDQ, and any other kind of race, because it's just a lot of fun. In fact, there's even randomizers for it. I was watching someone from our community this week play a randomizer where it's connecting Link to the Past, Super Metroid, and Mario.
Yes.
He was playing as Luigi, collected 300 rupees in Ridley's Lair. It was ridiculous.
That just sounds too much. That's
it's entertaining
too much for me.
No, you gotta watch it. It's so entertaining.
He was the Luigi walking around like this, like shooting out laser beams from his hand. It was absolutely ridiculous. There are many Metroids in the Metroid universe. This is the third. The one that came after this was, do either of you know?
Yeah. Fusion?
Prime. Prime and Fusion came out same year, remember? So I think you're right. Yeah. Prime, Fusion, then there's Zero Mission, Metroid Prime 2, Prime Pinball. There's a lot of Metroids in this universe, with Metroid Dread coming in the near future.
Oh my goodness. And Prime 4. Later at some point.
Interesting. And then this game had been re-released and ported multiple times. It made it to the SNES Classic Edition, of course. It's also available on the Switch Online for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, is it? That's nice.
Every time they've done a re-release of some Super Nintendo games, it's made the cut. Like, yeah, it's the classic Super Nintendo game.
A little bit pricey for your cartridge, $74 used, or $450 if you want it new.
I believe it. It's just what it's that it's there's something about this series that is like rare or feels uncommon in a collection. I don't know. People love this series, and so I'm not surprised that it's expensive.
People that like collecting things that are completionists like to collect this game. There's overlap there.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game receives our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It does require 2/3 of the votes to swing one way or the other. I'll begin, because why not? I think it's clear that we're all certainly going to give this game our vote for New Game Plus status. The reasons why summarized is because I don't think it's a perfect game. I think that there are a few flaws that, if they were remaking the game, could be buffed out to make it a pristine and perfect game. Because it is very close. The upgrades, the abilities, the look, the feel, the sound, the atmosphere, even the story elements that are played out not in dialogue sequences. You have one text scroll and it's at the beginning of the game. You might have a slight one at the end. But other than that, it's all told in game through the experience. No cutscenes needed. And that is done in such an immaculate way. It's so much fun to explore these worlds and to really feel like you are being powered up. And I love that they didn't even take the approach that a lot of games take, especially sequels, where they have to depower your character to empower them again. There wasn't even that kind of thing. She just started in one way, and then she was able to reclaim these abilities. It didn't have to do all of that. And so I just think it's super cool, especially, we didn't talk about it, Kenny brought it up just in passing, but the final fights are not the hardest, honestly, especially if you have 100% at it, but they are very story full and very emotionally impactful for someone that is really invested into this game. I think that you can get so much fun out of this game if you speed run it in less than 2 hours, and then I think you can get a lot of fun in it if you explore the world for 10 hours and anywhere in between. I think it's a wonderful game. Do I like it more than Metroid? I don't know, but it's an exceptional title and definitely gets my vote for New Game Plus status.
What a sick end to the pool party.
We were for real
wanting it. People wanted it. We had multiple submissions every time, and it wouldn't take. But it was finally
one
did.
Hot tub.
Yes, one hot tub. This game has stood the test of time. Yes, it's a nostalgic trip for me, but it is still so playable and relevant. I mean, from Hollow Knight to Axiom Verge to every indie platformer in between in the last 10 years, it's Super Metroid, just with a different idea. And this game is still, I can still put this game in and play it and have as much fun as I did and appreciate the elements of it that exist in modern games. It's so, so good. It's the OG. It does it the best. I envy anyone who gets to play it for the first time. NGP all day, all night.
That's two. Goes to you, Kenny.
Yeah, I'll agree with your sentiment, Dustin. No one's going to be surprised that this one gets NGP status. And of course, it gets it all the way across the board. That being said, I just want to point out that this game makes me sad.
Okay.
So it makes me sad that I didn't play this game originally. Like, my childhood is is lesser for not having gotten to do this as a kid, like for real and organically. It makes me sad that the nature of our podcast sometimes forces me not to revel in games like this in the way that I want to. I want to take them slow. I don't want to play with a guide. I don't want to feel like I've got to be in a hurry to see enough of it. You know what I mean? This is the kind of game that I just want to like be in for a while and not care about. And I always feel like the fact that I need to feel up to speed on something in a week is sort of a bummer. And so I love when these games come up, but it's kind of a bummer to be like forced to play them quickly. It makes me a little sad just for nostalgic reasons. I feel like this represents a uniquely special era of video games that just doesn't exist anymore. Sure, there's new games coming out. Sure, the kids that are growing up on the stuff that's coming out right now are probably going to say the same things when they're our age looking back. But it makes me a little bit sad. And it makes me a little bit sad that we didn't get to play this one together like we did with Metroid.
Watching me beat it, that'd be fun.
Yeah, like... And sad too that there aren't more games that are made with just this amount of love and care and attention to detail. It sets the bar so high.
So high.
There's absolutely a reason it gets one of the best games of all time titles, and I absolutely love this game, but in the kind of way that made me a little sad this week.
Which means, sadly, Super Metroid is New Game Plus certified.
Of course it is.
But what did you think? We had 763 votes on YouTube.
I thought you were going to say writers. Okay.
Y'all got to just know from now on that I'm going for YouTube first. 79% said yes, that it's worth playing today. 4% said no, go play something else.
Wow.
And then 17% have never played it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's actually more saying yes last week, or more percentage than this week, by just like one or two. But
I think just familiarity with is probably
sure.
Yeah,
sure. Jake, thank you for writing in. All of you, thank you for writing in. Not able to include all of your thoughts, of course, but did grab a few of yours. I wanted to start with a dissenter.
Okay,
I'll allow it, I guess.
Okay, listen. Listen to what Jake... Well, I'm going to do it anyways. Regardless. He said, I played Super Metroid a few months ago for the very first time. Overall, it's obviously a gaming classic for a reason. However, it is also a game I found myself only rarely enjoying. While the gameplay is tight, it relies on a maze-like level layout with many, many secret passages and floors, many of which you need to find in order to move on. This was exceedingly frustrating for me, and I found I had to have a walkthrough up to move forward much at all. With the walkthrough, though, I often hit a groove and really enjoyed the first two-thirds of the game. As more and more of the game clicked, I found that I needed to walk through less and less. And as I found the bosses easier to beat, I felt I didn't need to do every little secret passage the walkthrough mentioned. Then I got to the final boss, who literally will hit the player with an attack that cannot miss or dodge. This attack does X amount of damage, which was a significant amount of the health that I would have at full, making it literally impossible to win. I was extremely salty as I discovered this once I had become stuck in the area with the final boss. Great game, well put together, mediocre music, game methodology not for me, no New Game Plus.
I'm confused.
I'm okay with saying I don't like this type of game because it's not my type of game. The exploration, the finding the hidden stuff, the need for a guide if you're not into that is all totally fair. I'm a little hurt by calling the music mediocre. That one confuses me more than the other opinion.
Maybe because it's somewhat sparse or, you know, it's not a full out.
In some instances.
Maybe that's why. I'm just trying to come up with something. But you just stopped. But for me, I think what he has to say, so the final boss, it does hit you for, I think, an attack that does 300 damage regardless of how much health you came in starting with. And so, I think that's problematic because if you didn't have that much to begin with, or which I think you'd probably have to have somewhere around there, but if you lost a good amount in the fights leading up to it, you die. It would have been so, because it's a scripted thing, right? And because how everything happens, it could have brought you down to one. It didn't have to do a set amount of damage. And I think it's especially problematic because the last save point is in a locked zone that you can't go back to the rest of the map and get any more power-ups. So you are virtually screwed.
Okay.
I'll give it to you.
No. Here's what I'll say. Get good. Next one.
The odds of getting to this point in the game without having enough life to do it and act truly being stuck feel pretty low to me. So it kind of feels like a non-issue. It is bad. I wish they'd caught it, improved it somehow just philosophically, but I don't really have an issue with that as like a game breaking.
Putting a save after a point of no return is not
It's kind. Almost always bad.
It's not great. Clint said, there is no way we could finish the summer pool party, TM, trademarked, without finally playing Super Metroid. This game has withstood the test of time like so many other brilliant and gorgeous SNES titles both before and after it. The speedrunning community especially has kept this game alive and continued expanding its world with randomizers, hacks, and more. I think it's safe to say that Super Metroid was the game that defined the genre and has inspired such legendary titles that followed its examples, such as Castlevania, Symphony of the Night, and Hollow Knight. There are plenty of flaws in how the game functions, ranging from forced usage of advanced, hard-to-perform techniques, all the way to the infamous, unfair hiding spots for some collectibles. Even so, the game gets better and better with every playthrough, and even encourages repeated plays through the use of in-game timers so you can track your speed progress. Easy NGP, maybe one of the easiest.
I agree. Like, didn't have to think twice about it.
The Gaming Druid said, this week hasn't been the best. I tested positive with COVID on Tuesday, and I've been quarantining ever since. But it did give me time to play the game of the week, and this couldn't have happened on a better week. I did a 100% playthrough while lying sick in bed. It was pretty great. First off, this game gets NGP. No point in holding out on that one. But I also think that it might be the best game that has ever appeared on the podcast. Why is that? What is it that makes Super Metroid so special? Is it the foreboding atmosphere of isolation, the non-linearity and sense of progression, the near-perfect feeling of the controls, the replay value? Yes, it's all of these things, but also so many other things that I could write about forever if I wanted to. But what would be the point of that? Let's just put it simply then. I think that Super Metroid is the most lovable game ever made. I want to play it more so that I will love it more, and I want to love it more so that I will play it more.
Done.
Wow.
That's all that needs to be said.
No, that sounds dangerous. That sounds like a spiral that's just going to define your life into a weird addiction, and you're going to end up, I don't know, cosplaying this game at some point in ways that you're not comfortable with.
Thank you for all of those that wrote in. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of next week's episode. You can send in your thoughts and your commentary on the Retro Game of the Week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or hop into our Discord channel. We've got a commentary section there. And we'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our episode next week, which we're going to randomize now. Not really, though, because I know some of you are ready to get back to the old traditional retro randomizer.
Yeah, I miss it.
But we're not doing it this week. We will pick it up again next week. But guys, fellas, we are playing a game with a director. Jordan, our newest director, has selected a game that I've known about. I don't think that I've told y'all.
You haven't.
And I have been playing it now for about a week because I wanted to get a head start
Unfair.
On it.
Unfair.
What Cheater is it? Cheat face.
Well, the game that I'll tell you as soon as this audio plays.
Ding.
It's an RPG. My so genre.
No, not your favorite genre. Favorite genre.
All right. It originally released in 2001. I'm not going to continue until I've got all eyes on me. 2001 for the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
It's the 10th entry in the series.
Wow. Okay.
I watched Nolan finish it at my house or at his house.
That was 13.
Okay. I didn't watch Nolan. I watched him play it at his house one time.
Yeah.
It's set in the fantasy world of Spira. And it revolves around a group of adventurers defeating a rampaging monster known as Sin. It's called Blitzball. Actually, it's called Final Fantasy X.
We don't have enough time to play it this week. Sorry.
It's Final Fantasy X. We're playing Final Fantasy X with Jordan. We've got to play it from start to finish this week. So grab your copy and let's begin.
Join us in Discord, ngppodcast.com. There's a button that says join us in Discord. See you there.
Want to say a big thank you to our producers, including Marley and Anthony, Austin, Ben, Bethany Fox, Brunk, Carrie, Dan the Man, Francesca, Hi, I'm Josh, Joey, Corey, Lorelei, Maxima, Nowell, Secret Duck of Evermore, Shauna, Thomas, Unbedavable, Wardonis, William, and Zion. To our above and beyond level directors who support us with too much of their hearts, Antonin, Garlisle, Brochim, and Jordan, who you'll get to hear from next week. Hype. And a double big shout out to Justin, who upped his support to the producer level.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're appreciative.
Very cool. Hey, I do want to mention that you heard a new producer poll theme that was played at the beginning of this episode. It was made by Mr. Lattes. Mr. Lattes, I think that's how we pronounce his name. One of our community members, an incredible content creator. Thank you for that soundbite.
Thank you.
According to the Egyptians, it's pronounced Mr. Lattes. Okay.
Social medias are down in the show notes, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. You can listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, please leave a kind rating and review.
Sorry, self-correction. His name is Mer Lattes.
This episode was edited and produced by our good friend, Tom Tate. And you want to know who is not our good friend?
Kenny.
Yeah. Join us next week as we play Final Fantasy X. Until then, I'm still... Ripley.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Scott.
And this has been a Super New Game Plus.